Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva. Today, text number 36. I'd like to read the word for word first, so we have some idea what we're chanting before we chant it. Atha, thus, avagata, being fully convinced about, mahatmya, the greatness, Atmanaha, of himself, Jagat Atmanaha, and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Aparigeya Viryasya, who has unlimited potency, Na Not, Mene, did consider, Tut, the miraculous activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in bewildering him, Uha, certainly, adbhutam, as wonderful. Atha bhagata mahatmya. Atmano jagadatmanah. Aparigeya viryasya. Namene taduhadbhutam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. Thus Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not at all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Vishnu had acted upon him. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as all-powerful because no one can excel Him in any activity. In Bhagavad Gita 7:7, the Lord says, Mata parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. No one can equal the Lord or be greater than Him, for He is the master of everyone. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 5.142, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabhavritya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the only master of everyone, including even Lord Shiva. What to speak of others? Lord Shiva was already aware of the supreme power of Lord Vishnu. But when he was actually put into bewilderment, he felt proud to have such an exalted master. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine. The verse again, Athavagata Mahatmya Atmano Jagat Atmanaha Aparigyaya Viryasya Namene Tad Uhadbhutam. Thus Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not at all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Vishnu had acted upon him. The Srimad Bhagavatam establishes the position of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this theme runs throughout the Bhagavatam, comes out in many places. I'm always amazed or to see how Krishna's name comes up in so many situations, where often you would think maybe the word should be Vishnu here. Just like in Prahlad Maharaj's pastimes, you hear about how he was in ecstasy and remembering Krishna, actually having face-to-face contact with Krishna. There's a wonderful section in the seventh canto about Prahlad Maharaj. What an exalted soul he was. He was just out of this world, really. He was out of touch with this ordinary plane of reality. But it says that he was seeing Krishna. But we would always think, well, Prahlad Maharaj, his worshipable deity is Nrsingadev. And we would tend to think of Nrsingadev as a form of Lord Vishnu. But we see Krishna's name there. We see Krishna's name all over the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, Srila Prabhupada followed suit. He always put Krishna's name everywhere. Of course, one way to understand this is that all of these forms, they are Krishna. I think sometimes we can get a little, some kind of, in our minds, we may be thinking that Vishnu is somebody different than Krishna. There's Krishna and there's Vishnu. But Vishnu is Krishna, and Krishna is Vishnu. They're the same person, but they're showing different, it's just Krishna showing different aspects of himself. So Srila Prabhupada makes this point repeatedly in all of his talks and in all of his books. And he says, you might say he's constantly reminding us of this point. This is Krishna being present here, revealing himself. So here also, at the beginning of this pastime, Lord Shiva is approaching Lord Vishnu. But we know that the attraction and bewilderment and all of the opulences displayed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately they're coming from Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of everything. He is the original person. In one sense, he is everything. So whatever we see is a display of his potency and his power. So here we're seeing his power to bewilder Lord Shiva. Now Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. You know, in the ordinary conceptions of scholarly conceptions, for example, or the ordinary way people look at Hinduism, they talk about the triumvirate, or the three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, or Maheshwar. So in the common mind, at least in the West, there's this idea that these are just, these three are equal, Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma. They just have different roles to play. But we know, of course, that they're not equal. They don't display equal power. But they do have a lot of power. In fact, one can get easily confused. Another thing I've noticed in reading the Bhagavatam is that sometimes there is glorification of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma both, where it sounds like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, is being glorified. Of course, one of those instances, the person speaking is Hiranyakashipu, so we can take what he says with a grain of salt. But when he's performing his great penances, and finally Lord Brahma shows up to give him a benediction, so he glorifies him with the prayers that, they're prayers that are meant for Krishna, actually, or Vishnu. And Prabhupada actually says that in the purport. He's praying to Brahma. Brahma is right there. But Prabhupada says, actually, these prayers are meant for Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. And this also happens with Lord Shiva in certain places where he's glorified as God himself. So these personalities have great power because they're empowered by Krishna. They display some aspect of his power. I always like to point out how these two, especially Brahma and Shiva, they're so far beyond the demigod, the ordinary demigods, in their power. We may have a tendency to mix them all in. You know, Indra is maybe sort of like Brahma, but he's not even close. Brahma, actually, this whole universe is the body of Lord Brahma. He's the soul of this universe, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of this universe. Actually, Brahma has three different bodies. The Mahatattva is also considered a body of Lord Brahma. So he's so extraordinary. You can see why people might get confused and think that this is God, because he has such power. Imagine his consciousness. We can be conscious of what's going on in our bodies. We prick the end of our finger, which is you know, or our toe, which is the farthest thing from our brain where perception supposedly takes place, but still we experience it. So Lord Brahma knows what's going on everywhere in this whole universe. That's how expansive his consciousness is. So he's so powerful, Lord Brahma. And Lord Shiva is even above Lord Brahma. Lord Shiva is so close to being Lord Vishnu that it's hard to tell them apart. Really, the only thing that separates Lord Shiva is that he consorts with the material energy. So it's really Krishna, again, and for the purpose of his pastimes, actually, his activities, he's touching, in one sense. He's slightly touching the material energy. This is a pastime also. Everything Krishna does is a pastime. In the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third chapter, we have the list of the avatars. And there it's described that how these are all, you know, pastimes of the Lord. And it's also mentioned just after that, that the Lord's creation is also a pastime. And the word that's used there is amogha lila. So the idea is, don't think that this is something bad. The material, that Krishna making the creation is some bad thing. No, that's also amogha. Of course, amogha means faultless. It's pure, like everything Krishna does. It's pure. So in any case, these personalities, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they're so powerful, so there can be some confusion about their position. So here we're seeing, this is a nice verse I've got to speak on today, because the Leela has unfolded now. And Lord Shiva is expressing his appreciation. He's saying, really, I'm not surprised that I was bewildered. He's not embarrassed. You'd think he'd be embarrassed. You've listened to this pastime, what he just did. He really lost it. And so you'd think, well, he's such a great person. But he's not embarrassed because he's thinking, this is my Lord. This is my Lord and Master. We had that wonderful chapter chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva at the end of the fourth canto. He's teaching it to the Prachetas. So many prayers glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One of the nice prayers he says there is, he's indicating, he glorifies Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha in the beginning of his prayer. And at one point he says, I want to see the form that's dear to the devotees. That's the form of the Lord that I want to see, the form that the devotees love. And of course, who is the most dear form is Krishna's Shyam Sundar. His form is most attractive. Lord Shiva, of course, he's also here in the Dham, protecting the Dham. So he's involved in the Braja Leela also in certain ways. Such an exalted person, he gets to see Lord Krishna's Leela and take part in them. So what is the point? The point is that this is his master. Krishna is his master. Even though he's Maheshwara, Mahadeva, again in relationship to the other devatas, he's Mahadeva. He's way far beyond the ordinary. In the fourth canto, off the top of my head, it seems to me this is where we first hear about Lord Shiva, really, is in the fourth canto. Or at least in any pastime, we hear extensively about him in the Daksha Yajna. So the Daksha Yajna covers several chapters in the beginning of the fourth canto. And at the end of that, in the last section of that long story, the demigods, they got entangled in the whole thing, and it was a big mess, you all know it. It went on for a long, long time after the consequences of what happened. So finally, the devas, they decide we have to get the blessings of Lord Shiva, so they go to Kailas with Lord Brahma. Actually, they go to Brahma, and Brahma says, well, you have to go ask forgiveness because you've offended Lord Shiva. He's a great person. So they go to Kailas. There's a long description there in the fourth canto of what Kailas is like. And they get to Lord Shiva, and he's there. He's giving class, actually. It's described how he's sitting, exactly. and he's giving class, and Narada Muni is there. I always think it's humorous that Narada is everywhere. If you ever notice in the Bhagavatam, practically every scene, there's at least a cameo by Narada Muni. He's everywhere. And whenever anybody hears something, whatever it is, gets some news, the messenger is almost always Narada Muni. Even I think it's interesting when in the Daksha later, when Daksha wants, in his next birth, a few manvantars later, after he got the head of a goat, that part, but a few manvantars later, he comes back again, and he's supposed to populate the universe, so he creates all these, is it 10,000 Haryashvas and then 1,000 Savalashvas, and he hears that these Haryashvas became Paramahamsas, and they took the spiritual life, and they gave up their duty of household life. So who does he hear it from? He hears it from Narada Muni. Narada Muni is the one who got them basically to disobey the order of Daksha. Daksha wanted them to create children. In fact, Daksha had a legitimate reason to ask them to do that because he's given that service to do. But Narada foils his plan, his project. But Narada is the one who actually delivers the news. So in any case, Narada is there with Lord Shiva, and he's hearing Lord Shiva is speaking the Bhagavatam to Narada Muni and so many other sages. And Lord Brahma approaches him with the demigods in tow. He's the leader, and he's bringing them all there. They're like, you know, children who have been bad. So Brahma's bringing them to Lord Shiva and saying they're sorry. And Lord Shiva says, I don't mind. I'm not offended by what the demigods do. They're just like little children, he said. So it's like for Lord Shiva, these demigods, who, of course, from our position, they're very exalted souls and they have great power. They also have universal power. You know, they control the senses of all beings in the universe, some of them, and all the aspects, you know, universal aspects. So from Lord Shiva's position, they're just like little children. I don't take it seriously. They offended me, but that means Mahatma, really, one who can tolerate such things. They're insignificant. So, again, Lord Shiva's in such an exalted position. He's Maheshwara, he's Mahadeva, and he doesn't get disturbed very easily. So who is his Lord? His Lord is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He sees that, and he meditates on the Lord. So in this purport today, we have, of course, Prabhupada quotes a few pertinent verses. First, mata parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. So this verse is so important in Bhagavad Gita because it just lays it out there. How can you argue? Krishna says, mata parataram nanya. There is nothing superior to me. That's it. That's pretty definitive, you'd have to say. And Krishna makes the same point repeatedly throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna makes the point, which of course the Acharyas point out is important. It's not that Krishna is just bragging. Krishna is supported in what he's saying by so many great sages and rishis like Narada, Devala, Vyasa, Sita, and so on. And Arjuna, the great soul Arjuna, is verifying, corroborating what Krishna is saying. Now, what does Krishna say in that verse? He says, everything is on me, rests on me, as pearls are strung on a thread. So he pervades everything. He supports everything. He's the one who does that. No one else can make that claim. Only Krishna can make that claim. Of course, he also says, Aham sarvasya prabhava. Everything comes from me. The Bhagavad Gita, of course, is a very clear statement of Krishna himself expressing his superior position. Now, Prabhupada also quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 5, Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arasa Bhritya. Now, the context of this verse is interesting. The fifth chapter of the Adi Lila is the glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. And that chapter is about, much of it is about Lord Balaram. Because Lord Balaram is Lord Nityananda. I had to give class on Lord Balaram's appearance day in Alachua, where I live. And I read a verse from this chapter which glorifies Lord Nityananda. Sankarsana karanatoya shai garboda shai chapayobdi shai shishasthiyas yang sakalasa dityananda kirama sharanam namastu. So there, this prayer says that I worship Lord Nityananda Ram, who appears in different features to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sankarshan, the three Purushas, and Shesha, Ananta Shesha. So why, this is a prayer to Lord Nityananda, but it's glorifying Lord Balaram. Why? Because they're the same person. Nityananda is Balaram. In fact, when we first had Krishna Balaram installed in Alachua, at greeting the deities, I like to offer some prayers, and I didn't know any prayer to Lord Balaram. So I began reciting this prayer, because I knew this prayer. It's supposedly to Lord Nityananda, but it's Lord Nityananda Ram. Later I learned the prayer the gopis are glorifying Krishna Balaram as they're entering the forest in Vrindavan. So I recite that prayer to them. But this chapter 5 of the Adi Lila, is glorification of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And Lord Balaram. So what is it about? It's about this power of Lord Balaram. He's actually, everything comes from Balaram, really. Krishna has no other business than to play with the gopis and enjoy with the residents of Vrindavan. He doesn't have to create material worlds, or all of this is done from Balaram. From Balaram comes Sankarshan. Balaram is the original Sankarshan. Then there's Maha Sankarshan in Vaikuntha. Then we have the whole material world with the Maha Vishnus, or the Vishnus are involved with. The three Vishnus, they're the Purushas. They're all three are referred to as Paramatmas, actually. Maha Vishnu is Paramatma of the Mahatattva. And Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma of the universe. And Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma of each soul. So these are all very powerful aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vishnu aspect of the Lord. So what does all this come from? It all comes from Lord Balaram. And it's all about doing things, really. Creation, activity, work, you might say. I always like to make this point, and I've done it a few times in my editorials because it's something that I think about a lot. It's how the God that we worship, we don't want to just be in God's kingdom. It's like the Christians, they talk about they want to go to the kingdom of God. We don't want to just go to his kingdom, we want to go to his house. We want to be in his living room, you know, sitting down on Saturday afternoon and watching TV with God. We want to be that intimate. In fact, we want to be in his family, or as close as his family, his closest friends. So not just in some official aspect, like the example, like the judge. The judge has different personalities, really. The face that he shows in the courtroom is a very sober, serious one. I recently had the misfortune of having to serve jury duty in Florida, and I had to sit through 2 days of a trial, and I had direct experience of how sober the judges, no nonsense. So he shows that face in the courtroom, but when he goes home, you hope he's not like that with his children. He has to be like that Gladstone, was it? Prime Minister. He's playing horsey for his children. So he's a big, big shot. You have to wait. You can't even get in to see him, practically. You have to go through so many secretaries and so on. And then when you meet him, it's going to be all business. So he shows that aspect, and that may be your relationship with this person. Or just like the criminal, look at their relationship with the judge. But even other people in the courtroom, they tend to have an official relationship with the judge. But the judge at home is a different person, you might say. So we don't want to know God only as the judge, as the creator, as the power. We don't want to know just his power. In fact, the power is so overwhelming that you don't see the person. It's very hard to relate to the person. Like the Isha Upanishad says, remove that blinding effulgence. I want to see you. Ah, oh, you're glowing so much. Actually, in this pastime of the demigods, I think it's this one. It may be a different one. And maybe when they're having to do with the churning of the milk ocean. But the demigods come with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to see Lord Vishnu, and they can't see him. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva can see Lord Vishnu, but at first, the demigods can't even see him. All they see is a blinding light. So the power of God can hide his form and hide his real power, actually. Our acharyas point out, because you may think, well, if Krishna is a supreme powerful, but what, he just looks like a little boy. So what is his power? He's not showing any power. But what is his power? His power is his sweetness. His power to attract every living entity. Even the most qualified persons, even Lord Shiva. His power is to have Lord Shiva bow at his feet, perform austerities, sit under this huge tree that he sits under to meditate, to get the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to serve him in so many ways. Why? Just because he's sweet. Just like a child has the power to make you smile. What is a child? A child has no power, really. Like those stories of Krishna where Nanda Maharaj says, you know, go get this or that, and it's too heavy, so he can't do it. So he kind of like shrugs his shoulders. Then he hits his arms like, I'm strong. Kids like to do. They do this little thing, this mudra, you know. Our little boys, I'm strong. But they have no power, but they have a power to please, actually. They have a power to make us smile, to entertain us, you might say. Children are very entertaining, their antics, their innocence. So that's Krishna's power. Krishna has the power to capture everyone. He has the power to make us love him, actually. Awaken our love. And he has the power, getting back to what I was talking about in this fifth chapter of the Adi Lila, about Lord Balaram. He's so powerful. But at the end of the Brahma Vimohan Lila, when he saw how all the calves were running to their mothers, the calves were too old. They weren't at the suckling stage anymore. They weren't drinking milk from their mothers anymore. But these calves, they were running to their mothers to do that. And the fathers of the cowherd boys, they were so affectionate, tears were running down their eyes, they were probably running down the hill. It said they crossed the road with great, it was very difficult for them to traverse the road to get to their sons, but they did it. They were so pulled to them. So Balaram is experiencing this, and he's saying, why are they so attracted to the calves and the cowherd boys? And he say, and I am also, I didn't used to feel so much attraction to these boys and these calves. So what's going on here? So then he realized, oh, this maya, this magic, this energy has to be coming from my brother, Krishna. Nobody else has the power to bewilder me. Only Krishna has the power to bewilder me. So it's very similar where Balaram, at first he was astonished by the power, then he wasn't astonished. He said, well, that's just Krishna. That's the way he is. He's powerful. And I'm his servant. So in the context of this Balaram, this verse where Balaram expresses this, comes just before this, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arsa Britya. Even Balaram is Britya. Even Balaram is servant. And we want to be the servant of the servant of the servant so many times removed. There's this one shloka, Masjanmana Palamidam Madhukaita Bhare Matpratanya Maranugra Esha Eva. Tvad britya britya paricharika britya britya brityasya britya itimam smaralokanata. This is it Yamunacharya or Kulashekar? I always get them mixed up. I think Yamunacharya. So he says his only desire is to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, so many times removed. I was just reading Yamuna Devi's wonderful book, and she was giving one incident of this where there were some
disagreement between two leaders. Actually, they were servants of Prabhupada, and they were fighting over Maha. And it was brought to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, no, you have to... He said, to be the real servant of the Guru is the servant of the Guru's servants. So you have to see each other in this way. This person is the servant of my spiritual master, so I have to cooperate with him, and we have to work things out, and there shouldn't be fighting and so on. So servant of the servant, so many times removed. Prabhupada often mentioned it like that. Often, I will often wonder, what does it mean to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant? Does that mean, you know, somebody, some devotee has a housekeeper, so I'm supposed to go serve this housekeeper or something? Of course, we do that. Prabhupada was challenged when he visited Potomac. Someone said, what are you doing? What are you doing for humanity? How are you serving humanity? That's what he wanted to know. Prabhupada said, we are serving everyone by giving education. That's the best service. We're giving education. So we also serve outside. But this mood is there. So this one way we can understand this, to serve the servant of Krishna so many times removed, means the parampara. We serve the parampara. Because there's a direct link to Krishna. Krishna has spoken directly to someone, and then it's being passed down and down and down. And each person, each step of the parampara is the servant of the person above. So we are, when we serve the current link, then we're also serving the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, and so on. So, of course, Lord Mahadev, he's also at the head of the sampradaya, and he's instructed so many persons. The house where I'm staying, they have a copy of the Narada Pancharatra there. I'd never seen it before. And it's interesting because it begins with Narada saying that Mahadev is my guru. And I've just started to read some of it. And he explains how he heard from Lord Mahadev. So even Narada Muni, he's, of course, the guru of so many persons. He's recognizing Lord Mahadev as his guru. So Mahadev is, of course, also our guru. We offer him all respect. And we take his opinion as he's giving it here. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Lord Swayambhur Narada Shambhu. He's also one of the Mahajans. So that's how we know, you can say. There are many ways that we know that Krishna is God. One way we know is because the Dwadash Mahajan, the 12 Mahajans, each one of them is a devotee of Krishna. Each one of them is telling us, no, I'm not the supreme, even though they are greatly powerful persons, many of them. All of them, actually. The Vaishnavas, or the expansions of the Lord, they're saying, no, they're pointing to Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'll read the verse again. Atavagata mahatmya atmano jagadatmanaha aparigyeya viryasya namene tadhu hadbhutam. Thus Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not at all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Vishnu had acted upon him. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? No. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.